Just a drink. A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not.
It gets the people going.
Reveal your secrets.
Hello, and welcome to Gin and Comics, the show without a catchphrase. I'm your host, Ben Webb, and with me is my co-host and the creator and producer of GNC, Zach Logan. What up, Zach?
Not much. I am just sitting here on a wonderful Thursday evening enjoying the Thursday of Comic-Con while not being at Comic-Con.
I know, right? It's both depressing and a little bit elated-ing, too.
Yeah.
Whatever that word is for, like, because I'm an introvert, so I'm like, oh, people. But I mean, as far as like the news and stuff, if you've been keeping up with things that have been going on Twitter, my Twitter's been blowing up, like hearing about all the news. We're going to talk a little bit about some of that today, but also we're going to continue our review of Matt Smith's run on Doctor Who. It's a show that so far has very little of Matt Smith running. I know, right? Zach, you want to start us off with that 30-second summary?
Yeah, so in this episode, we have the Doctor receiving a strange phone call that Amelia Pond answers, and she answers it to find that none other than Winston Churchill has called the Doctor for some help. When the Doctor arrives in World War II ridden Britain, he finds that his mortal enemies, the Daleks, have been assisting the UK in their efforts in defeating Nazi Germany. Throughout this, they talk to a scientist who is responsible for inventing the Daleks. The Doctor, knowing the true origin of the Daleks, knows that something is off. And as he explores, he finds that something truly disturbing is behind these events. Dun, dun, dun.
I know, right? This was a really good episode. Do you have any standout characters?
Oh, so Winston Churchill, I think, is every time that this actor portrays Churchill, I'm almost like beside myself because he's so good. Ian McNeice, that's his name. Ian McNeice plays Churchill and just really embodies Churchill the way that British people view Churchill as. So, and it's definitely not like, so you have in more recent times, Gary Oldman portraying Churchill, and, he does a great job, don't get me wrong, but you still get essence of Gary Oldman in his portrayal. This, I just feel like in this, Mr. McNeice's portrayal is just a perfect adaptation of Churchill.
So has you said his name was McNeice or
yeah
he's portrayed Churchill before? I didn't know that.
No, just in the Doctor, but I'm talking about like in the future, because he I think he comes back in Matt Smith's run
okay,
two or three different times as Churchill.
Huh.
And so every time he comes back on the screen as Churchill, I love it.
It's awesome. One of the things that I noticed about, as far as character development, I don't really know if this applies as character oriented, but I liked how the show handled the era of World War II. You really got a feel for just where the Doctor was at this time and what was going on. Of course, being an American, I don't really have quite the understanding of World War II as the UK would, but
yeah, looking back at it, it is it's like a miracle that the UK was able to bounce back the way they did. Like, they were torn apart by World War II. Like, number of cities bombed, it just, like, and night raids. Like, there would just be, for weeks, every single night, Germans were flying over and just bombing the crap out of this. And so it's a crazy little thing that they were able to come out the way they did. But now, knowing that the doctor helped them with all of it, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, I really think that if, you know, this kind of technology was around back then, I think Churchill would have gone for it.
Yeah, I think anyone would have, right?
Yeah.
So you're
so desperate.
Exactly. And that's kind of what Churchill did. So people forget that his first run at leadership didn't end the greatest. Like, people weren't the happiest with him. They only really liked him after he spoke out against Neville, what's his name? Chambers, mm-hmm. I believe that sounds somewhat right. But the prime minister before Churchill was appeasing Hitler. Like, he was just, Hitler was like, hey, I want some more land. I want to violate my treaty, so I want you guys to, you know, be okay with that. And he just kind of allowed him. And Churchill is kind of famous for the quote that appeasement is like feeding a dragon hoping that it would eat you last. And so then as soon as Hitler invaded these other countries from getting what he wanted, everyone was like, Churchill was right. And so then they kind of gave him another chance. And this is where he really just tries the same thing over again that he had tried before in World War I, but this time it is successful.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what he did is that he kind of is this desperate times comes for desperate measures type of person. And really just like thinking about how to make it through the night and all this stuff, deserves to be remembered, no doubt about it. And yeah, so I think that if this technology was around, it is safe to say that anyone would have been for it. Like, if any scientist would have come to the United States in World War II and said, hey, I got this new thing that is awesome, and it's like, however you want to explain a dialect to someone. And yeah, of course. But we're viewers seeing Doctor Who before and are aware of the dialects. We're like, oh, that's not a good idea.
No. Makes the Doctor being late all the more devastating. At least troubling. Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's the Daleks. And you can call them whatever you want to. What I found to be quite, you know, you're watching the episode and you're going, okay, so when do the Daleks show themselves? When do they show their real nature? When do they show their true nature? And the twist in this thing is so good. Mm-hmm. Because you're just like, oh my, I mean, it's a twist that everybody else has seen coming, but you're just like, wow, okay. So, were there any other characters that you thought were standout, or?
So, I kind of have a bit of a complaint.
Okay.
So, the Bracewell guy, the guy who invented the Daleks, I did not like his story arc very much.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't like that, and I didn't like the way that they saved him. Like, that just seemed silly.
Yeah.
Like, so the Daleks, you know, created in him a, you know, a bomb, more or less, that was to, you know, detonate and all this stuff. but it doesn't detonate because he acknowledges, like, he convinces himself that he's human. And so I'm just like, yeah, the Daleks wouldn't make that mistake.
That's true.
And so I didn't care for his storyline. This episode wasn't necessarily my favorite in that sense, but I kind of feel like it was a weaker episode. But I did enjoy the war-torn Britain aspect of it. I just didn't, everything surrounding that, I didn't really care about.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
When it comes to Professor, is it Bracewell or Broswell?
Maybe it's Broswell. Maybe they say Broswell. Yeah.
Because I saw his actual name, and then I was like, oh, wait. Sorry about that. Anyway, brain fart. When I was thinking about Professor Broswell, I thought about Data from Star Trek a little bit. just because, I mean, they're both androids, and they're both created from interesting means. Mm-hmm. You know, Broswell is how the Daleks snuck back into Earth and history and time itself. And Data was more like he was created because his creator failed to on his first couple of tries with androids. So for me, it was a little bit more compelling, and I just kind of like the whole, like, realizing that you're human. But I will agree that this is not the strongest of episodes, because you can kind of see some of that stuff coming. It doesn't really add to anything as far as the overarching theme that they're trying to build. The tone is a little bit darker here than it was in the last couple of episodes. But still kind of enjoyable, you know?
Yeah, I think that anything with the Daleks that Whovians are watching are going to enjoy it to an extent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I had the same feeling the first time I watched it, too. So the very first time I watched this episode, I had the same sort of feeling. I felt like something was off. Like, I was like, that didn't seem as strong as the last two. And it definitely doesn't seem as strong as the next two. The more I watch it, the more I'm just like, you know what? I could just skip over all this stuff. Like, it doesn't even matter. Like, none of it even matters to the overall story. Like, it doesn't extend. I mean, I guess it kind of extends the, like, it just serves to show that the Daleks survived from the previous, what was it? Was it the season before where they were destroyed, or two seasons ago at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, I think it was just the season before.
I do remember it being a big deal. Yeah, because no.
Yeah, because yes. it was Tenet.
Davros. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So all this stuff, you know, it serves basically just to show that they survived, and it. Other than that, it just. I feel like that they could have gotten rid of Broswell and, or just got rid of that stupid bomb. Like, why?
Yeah.
Like that whole thing just makes me kind of frustrated when I watch it. I just don't care for it. But I mean, going forward, you have, this sets the stage for, you know, the rest of the episodes leading to, Matt Smith's Doctor, you know, meeting or crossing paths with the Daleks that is meaningful and pushes the story through. Especially when you get to Laura Oswin Oswald and her storyline with her little Dalek adventure. And then, of course, going into Peter Capaldi's, who his series is very, very, like, the Daleks are very much represented in his series. And so it kind of sets the stage for that, but everything else, I'm just like, I don't really care. I don't really care that they have multiple colors. Like, so what? You got a yellow one, you got a red one, you got a white one, a blue one, and they're bigger. So, like, okay. Why didn't they just make it like that the first time? Like, Davros, come on. Get a grip, man. But, yeah. Other than that, it's fine.
Yeah.
I love the next two episodes. The next two episodes are great.
I haven't seen those yet. I'm gonna wait and see what
I got.
Yeah. I've seen them once. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen them twice. Like,
yeah.
You know,
so what happened with me was I.
So, you OD'd, okay, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. So what happened is I'm watching this episode. At the end of it, I'm like, I don't really feel for it. And they show that preview at the end. So they just have the preview of the next one. I'm like, oh my gosh, I love the Weeping Angels. I think the Weeping Angels, that everything with the Weeping Angels is my favorite. I love them. I wish they would come back. Why don't they come back? If the Daleks come back, they can come back.
Yeah. And you talk about a filler episode that is really good. Because, I mean, when I was first watching Doctor Who, I was watching it, you know, with some friends from college. And so in order to help, like, speed through and get to the good storylines, you'd have one of my friends would go, okay, that one's a filler episode, so we can skip that. But when it came to, like, a really good filler episode, the introduction to the Weeping Angels was amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
So
and it's weird because that's probably the introduction to the Weeping Angels, Tenet, you know, and Tenet, what was the season? I don't remember what season it was.
Three.
Was it three?
Yes.
Okay.
Three, four.
I think that's right. Yeah. Anyway, that whole introduction, the doctor's only in the episode for like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's weird. It's like not even a Doctor Who episode, but it's so good. The story, that's when you know when Stephen Moffat was writing the stuff, he's just like, he's in the groove. And so now I don't see anything with the Weeping Angels as being a filler episode because of the way that they end with, you know, Matt Smith's doctor. It's like everything is, you know, with them matters.
Well, the show doesn't either, because, you know, that was a filler episode when they were introduced. The next time that they appear, it's a two-parter. That's, you know, that's how significant they are and how people just love them. But getting back to the Daleks, I know they weren't as well represented here, but what do you think makes them compelling villains in the Doctor Who universe?
So I think that it goes back to the nostalgia. So starting kind of going back to that, you have the Daleks that, you know, they are literally a trash can. That's, you know, it's kind of back when they created them in the 60s. They, you know, it's the same kind of nostalgia that's following around R2-D2. It's like when you see R2-D2 on the screen for the first time, it's like, I don't know what that is. I don't understand this, but I like that. That's a cute, weird thing going on. And the Daleks kind of have that same sort of effect, not cute, weird thing, but kind of like, this is kind of weird. What's going on? They're robot, but they're like living organisms at the same time. This is kind of, so I think that the compellingness is that. And then also for people that go back when Davros is first introduced in, it had to have been season one because it was the first doctor. When Davros is introduced back then as well, you kind of get at like this introduction to the Daleks, but kind of a backstory for them. And that kind of makes it even more compelling because, like, it's like, why does this guy hate the doctor so much? And so I think it's just this aspect of mystery, weird, and the doctor acknowledges their power. And I think that's what makes him truly compelling.
Yeah.
The doctor realizes that they are menacing and he's scared of them. Like, he's kind of not necessarily like fearful of them, but he's always, you know, where are the, I think it's always in the back of his mind that he, I think he knows when and where the Daleks are at all times. And so I think whenever he found out that they're in Britain, he's like, whoa, what? because I think that that's one of his things that he, I don't know if it's like in his TARDIS and it's like this little algorithm that's constantly going, like the Daleks are at this point in this time period. And so I think that that's, I think that's part of it that makes him menacing, is that the doctor acknowledges their power. And he only does that a few times. Like, there are times where he still goes toe to toe with the Daleks, but they're, like he doesn't shy back from that, but he is very much acknowledging who they are and is angry. Like, I think that the Daleks bring the Doctor to more anger moments than any other villain, minus Missy and the Master, but that's later on.
Yeah.
The Daleks trigger an emotion that only they can in the Doctor, I think. Them and the Cybermen, but it's like, yeah.
That's very interesting. Because if it, they do, they look like a literal trash can. And why should you be afraid of a trash can
with tennis balls on them?
Exactly. Yeah.
And a plunger. And, you know, like, and if you look back at their original design, it literally was a plunger. Like, they were on such a tight budget when they created this character that they just put a plunger on them. And I was like, hey, it's a key cannon thingy-majig. Yeah, so.
But if one of the strongest beings in the universe, a.k.a. the Doctor, is afraid of something, you should really pay attention, because these things are not to be messed with. And I also think that it's not what they look like, but what they do and their intent.
And let's kind of skip forward real quick. So going to Peter Capaldi's Doctor, this is a spoiler for his episode. But when he meets Davros, child Davros, so in whatever season, episode, whatever that was. Mm-hmm. But I always knew that the Daleks were a sensitive subject for the Doctor, but in that episode where Davros is caught by like the little hand mine things when he's a kid, and the Doctor is tempting to let him die, like he has a moment where he does, like in his history, he lets Davros die, or at least he thinks so, and it's because of his past with the Daleks. Like, he's so, the fact that the Doctor is willing to be somewhat responsible for a child's death speaks to how menacing these villains are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, And so going back, because I watched, I wrapped up Capaldi's season right before watching this episode.
Gotcha.
And so that was really fresh in my mind. So it made this episode a little more bearable.
Alrighty. Were there any other characters that stuck out?
No, I think as always, Matt Smith's Doctor is great. Amelia Pond is great.
I have two quotes. Mm-hmm. Because my thing with, you know, rewatching these again, I'm always like, oh, okay, so what makes it compelling? And it's always because the Doctor has a sense of humor, regarding Matt Smith. And so I'm always like, okay, what are the quotes? And because this was so different from the other two, there weren't as many quotes, save one. And that's where the Doctor is fighting the Daleks on their ship, and the Doctor threatens to blow up the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Daleks go, scan reveals nothing. TARDIS self-destruct device non-existent. All right, it's a Jammy Dodger, but I was promised tea. I thought that was hilarious because you can really tell that the Doctor is bluffing.
Mm-hmm.
But he goes, yeah, I didn't mean it, but it's okay. It's I found that to be hilarious.
Yeah, it's so going back to the menacing, let's connect that. The Doctor doesn't make any jokes until he feels like he has the upper hand.
That's true.
Once he feels like he has the upper hand, he lightens up a bit. But until then, he's like angry. He's mad for the first 20 minutes of this episode.
Yeah.
To the point where he's kind of like giving Amelia the cold shoulder. And leaves her without telling her anything.
Yep.
He's just like, bye. And she's like, wait, where are you going? He's like, bye. And hops on the TARDIS and goes up to the Dalek ship.
Which is more Capaldi's thing, if I remember correctly. Like, Capaldi had a little bit more of, I'm doing my thing, you're doing yours, you know, you're my companion, but I've got to do my thing.
I have to say, I can't wait until we get to Capaldi's Doctor. Last time watching, I know this is beside, you know, this is off topic here, but he really grew on me.
He does.
I kind of took a hiatus from Doctor Who for a while because I didn't know how I felt about him. Mm-hmm. I still think his first few episodes are a little weak. And honestly, I like Clara fine. I've always liked her as a companion. I don't have any issues with her. But I wasn't too crazy about Capaldi and Laura's run on Capaldi's Doctor. Once Clara disappears, spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Once Clara gets, you know, however you explain what she got stuck in, or she's just refusing to go die, whatever. However you want to explain it. Once it gets there and we're introduced to Bill, that companion, I was immediately invested. As soon as that first episode happened, I was like, this is great. I loved all that. But anyway, side note.
I have not seen those episodes.
What episodes?
But the episodes with before Capaldi and Clara split.
Well, why did you let me spoil something?
It's okay.
No, that's
you,
what you.
Oh, listen, you only spoiled a name, man. What? When he meets Bill, you know, wink, wink. I'm like, no, I don't, but thanks for the name. Thanks for the name.
So this is fun. Do you even know who Bill is?
No.
All right, who do you think Bill is? I'm just curious. Describe Bill to me. Just hearing the name, what do you think Bill's like? And I'm going to tell you how close you are.
Well, he isn't he played by the actor who did who's a comedian in Britain.
No,
is that the same guy? No,
no.
Okay, well then.
So you're already just way off.
Way off. No, it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Bill, short for Billy with an IE. Is this the
black
girl? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. Yeah, so the female companion.
Spunky. She seems very spunky. I don't know if she actually is or not.
She is very spunky.
The character is. Gotcha.
And she's great representation for two reasons on Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she checks off two boxes of representation in television. But anyway, that's what I just let's get back to the Daleks. All right, so Ben, what character stuck out to you?
Well, I think we kind of covered them. There was a little bit more of some development for Matt Smith's doctor. It just seeing how he interacted with the Daleks. Nothing really much for Amy. She didn't get any development or very little screen time. It was just kind of like, okay, you know, stay here and try and prevent the London from blowing up. And like, okay.
And by the way, I'm still getting married tomorrow.
Okay. I mean, you were right. She was completely shuffled. So I didn't really appreciate that, especially when the last two episodes built her up as like, oh, you know, transform.
But I wonder if he does that because of, you know, the whole Dalek in relation to what is her name? Rose. Why did I was like drawing a blank on her. But I almost said Billy because she's played by Billy Piper. But anyway, Piper. Rose. Yeah, I wonder if that's why he pushes Amelia away, because the last time the Doctor interacted with the Daleks, it was very, it had very strong repercussions with.
Oh yeah,
with Rose.
Yeah. So Amy was a little shafted this episode. It kind of made me feel a little bad. But I did like the Daleks, and I did like to see them return. Because I'm the guy that likes to see the different designs. I'm going, oh my goodness, oh look, they got new chrome. Oh, it's white now. Oh my god. You know, because weirdness, I guess. And just how menacing and horrifying they actually are, which is a testament to the writing more than it is the visuals and the production design, or character design, I should say. But yeah, those, the Doctor and the Daleks, I think those were the only two that stood out to me. Everybody else was just kind of like meh.
Yeah.
So but anyway, you want to talk some Doctor Who canon?
Yeah, I kind of
did. You have anything for how this relates to the canon of Doctor Who?
So it kind of goes. So the nice thing about Matt Smith's run is that you can kind of pick it up at without watching the previous Doctors and still not being completely confused. And so he explains to Amelia, like Amelia is kind of playing the new audience for us. You know, when she doesn't remember the Daleks, he's like, how do you not remember the Daleks? Like they basically took over the world for a week. Like, how do you not remember what they did? It was crazy. Like all this stuff. And so he's obviously referring to what happened with David Tennant, in that series, but he explains to her that something happened and is like, this is crazy. How do you not remember it? And then he realized something is wrong. And so it kind of, you know, it's obviously pointing viewers back like, hey, if you didn't watch it, so you can go watch it to kind of understand. But at the same time, to drive the plot forward, you don't need to understand it. You just need to know something happened that people don't remember. And it kind of explains that. It explains why people don't remember and what they did and all this stuff. And so I appreciate that, what they did there. Other than that, I didn't catch anything in regards to like connection to canon. Did you?
Well, as I was watching it, I had a question about when the first time the Doctor actually faced the Daleks. I know in canon it was the time war between what's the Doctor's race called? I feel so bad for not knowing.
Time Lords?
Thank you. Time Lords versus the Daleks. And it, you know, Gallifrey explodes. That's when, in canon, he actually, you know, he meets them, he fights against them. In the show, though, the Daleks appear in what's called the second serial of 1963. For those of you who don't know, a serial is one story told over several episodes. And I think they were like 45 minutes apiece. I'm not really sure. If you look online to see like where, how the older episodes are, set up, it's by serial, not really by episodes. So this was the second serial ever. And it took about 8 episodes in that serial to kind of explain the Daleks. I think the first Doctor actually fought them in a jungle, which was so weird. But
yep.
I mean, not really weird, you know. If you're a Whovian, you're like, oh, well, that was yesterday. We did that.
Yeah.
There was a monkey and everything.
Like, that's the thing, is that when people are explaining Doctor, like when you're trying to get someone to watch Doctor Who, it's like there's like this connection. You meet someone, you find out that they watch Doctor Who, and you're like, we have a connection.
I know. It's the greatest thing.
It's great. It's like there's a whole friend base and Doctor and people that watch Doctor Who. But the next thing is that if you want to get people introduced in, you got to tell them. It's weird.
Yeah.
Like it's weird. It's a weird show. And that's not an insult, and that's not anything bad. It's just, it's weird. And once you open up to that, you will be fine, because some of the best Doctor Who episodes are some of the weirdest.
Oh, yeah. So no more canonical stuff you got? Or
nothing on my end.
Okay. Well, we're going to skip now to speculations, because, goodness, y'all, we got some new stuff that had dropped. I mean, just today, about the new season or series of Doctor Who. And I think it was was it called a trailer or teaser? I get those mixed up.
Well, now they call them teaser trailers. So, but okay. I think that, and they've always kind of called them that, but you know, now they're like in print as teaser trailer. But anyway, the one that dropped today was a teaser trailer, because it didn't progress it didn't show viewers what the plot was. Necessarily, it just was basically like, this is kind of what we're getting,
which I mean, I think is a good call on their marketing.
It's great.
They're already doing something completely different by having a woman.
I didn't know how close it was. Like I guess I was completely oblivious to this, but it's coming out in the fall. Like, don't they usually launch them at Christmas time, or is that just me? Or am I just
going
crazy?
That's a good question.
Or at summer. I've always felt like they do a Christmas episode, and then they do all right, coming in the summer. And so then you have to wait like another couple months before you actually get the series. But this is coming in the fall. This is pretty sweet.
Well, yeah.
But I kind of want to talk about that first teaser that was released a day or so ago. All right. So the stuff that's going on here, we have people in a restaurant and they're seeing these like little, you know, things. What exactly is happening there? And do you think that that's just like to tease something, or do you think that that's what we're going to see in the show? Like people seeing this type of... are they seeing in TARDIS time? Is that what that is?
First, it reminded me of a Coke commercial, and I'm like, there's no way. Mm-hmm. But then, because that's just the kind of things that they do in Coke commercials. It's like, and then, you know, the Santa Claus thing comes rolling down the way. Anyway, I think that, because doesn't the TARDIS explode at the end? Or is, because... one of the things that I watched as a part of the, you know, that teaser that you're talking about, I saw the transformation scene, and the new doctor, what's the actress's name? I feel really bad about that, too.
Jodie Whittaker?
Jodie Whittaker, thank you. So Jodie Whittaker, you know, she transforms into her doctor, and the TARDIS starts to, like, go on its side, and I think it explodes, spoiler alert. So maybe, like, it's trying to reform somehow, or... And that's what people are seeing, and only certain people can see it. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that she ends up recruiting to be her companions.
I can't. Now I'm drawing a blank I'm drawing a blank on that. Does it? Let me see here. So she regenerates in the she regenerates in the TARDIS,
mm-hmm.
or he Capaldi regenerates in the TARDIS, turning into her, and yeah, I mean, I guess it. I'm gonna be mad though, like if it. So. So this was kind of whenever I first watched the teaser, and I was really confused. I mean, it starts kind of doing that, but the TARDIS always kind of goes through these phases of regenerating itself as well.
Mm-hmm.
But so if she's falling, something has to catch her, right?
Yeah.
Because she fell out of it as it was. We don't actually see it explode. We see the inside kind of exploding. But we don't actually see the TARDIS exploding itself. But so whenever I first watched this teaser and she's like moving around like she was, I was like, dude, if they take away the TARDIS, I'm going to be pissed. Like if they don't have the TARDIS, like I,
they wouldn't like, do that.
They wouldn't. And I was kind of comforted with the actual trailer, but that's kind of what I was looking at. I was like, if she's doing this like weird time travel without the TARDIS, I'm not watching it. That's weird. And that's too weird because the TARDIS is like, the Millennium Falcon to Han Solo. If you have a Han Solo movie and you don't have the Millennium Falcon, I'm not watching it. Why would I watch that? And so hopefully that's the case where that's happening. And then with the trailer when it came out, you see her kind of on the other side of this curtain, and there's a hint. There's like the little appears to be the TARDIS light, and then a blue little color. A blurry thing back there, which has to be the TARDIS. So I was a little more comforted in that. But yeah, so what do you think that is exactly? That what we're seeing in that teaser? Do you think it actually is going to... So my question is, what is it? And do you think it's actually going to play into the series? Or is that just something to catch people's attention?
All three, I think. It could be one of those things where it's a problem for Great Britain, and so she has to come and solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because supernatural things happen in Great Britain in this show all the time, especially modern day. So it could be something that's like time could be warped somehow, and mm-hmm. As she's showing up, it could be because, you know, she's the fact that she's regenerating and that energy could be causing it, so she like it takes it a while, because we're also being introduced to these three people who I think are going to be really important.
Yeah, I think that those people that we saw, because they're the only one, if you notice, they're the only ones that see the stuff changing.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think that they're, I don't necessarily think we're going to see the same sort of special effects that we saw, like of that like weird like lightning looking stuff. I think that was more of like a teaser to kind of show these new companions, because the thing that made me think that was the lady with the pizza box. So the pizza box is empty, and then she opens it back up and there's another pizza in there, and she kind of like looks at the camera and gives this like little smirk thing, like she knew what happened. And so I don't necessarily know if we're, I think that was just like a teaser to like you know, while you're watching the TV, you see that and you're like, what is this? This is weird. And they're like, oh, it's the doctor. The doctor's back. So that's my theory, but we could very well see it. But if we do, I kind of hope that it's just like allowing viewers to see what TARDIS time looks like, because we kind of always get this aspect that people who get into the TARDIS, they see things a little bit differently. And so I think that might be it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Kind of the Infinity Stone thing where it just, you know, you turn your hand clockwise or whatever, and time shifts or vice versa, you know.
Yeah. Let's talk about the one thing I also want to talk about is, did you pick up anything about this doctor's attire?
I love this doctor's attire. I was like, because it's a lot brighter and lighter, and I feel like she's going to be the same way, you know, as far as her attitude, which would be a nice change of pace, because Capaldi was the exact opposite.
Right. And now a lot of people didn't like Capaldi because of that. I loved it.
Well, they're wrong. But yeah. it's a little bit more of a drawback, and it actually reminds me of, who was it? The fourth or fifth doctor that wore very colorful attire with like the
Are you talking about the scarf?
Yeah, the scarf and the whole thing. Yeah. That's what that reminds me of.
All right. So this is what whenever I first saw the picture, I picked up on like 12 things at once.
Yeah.
So the first thing was the scarf. So if you notice the shirt she wears, that the stripes are the same stripes that are from that scarf.
Yeah.
The jacket that she's wearing, very trench coat. It's the same looking trench coat that David Tennant wears. Suspenders, of course, Matt Smith. And then even the boots were very Matt Smith-like. And so those things, like, I really picked up on was like,
poor
whoa.
Capaldi.
Yeah, I know. Capaldi kind of doesn't get anything. But I'm curious because in the teaser, I saw another thing from the teaser that I'm trying to go to it on this webpage, where she is wearing something that's reminiscent of the doctor.
Well, yeah.
Or of Capaldi's doctor.
Yeah, after she regenerates, you know, she's still wearing the same clothes that he was, which every doctor has. Once they've regenerated, it's the body, not the clothing. So they've had to, you know, change the clothes commensurate with their personality. So, I just loved it. I thought it was, you know, very refreshing and just brought new life to it.
All right. So now let's talk about kind of fandom here. So
okay.
This is another thing that I want to ask you about.
Okay.
So we have Star Wars that there is a small group, not even a small group. There's a group of fans that are very much criticizing the franchise because it's female centric.
Okay.
People are saying it's too female centric. I know that this is a British television series. But do you think there's going to be some backlash to the Doctor being
a female? Don't ask such a...
Will there be any backlash to the...
Yes, there's always going to be backlash. Don't ask such a dumb question. Like, there's... I'm sorry. This is what happens when you practically live on Twitter. You see, a character in a franchise could fart, and then there'd be like a whole thing. Because fanboys are very sensitive, you know. This is my property. I became a fan before anybody else, and this is my thing. So yes, there's going to be backlash, and I think that the creators know this, because it's not very much a guy-centric thing anymore. But they're coming at it from the perspective of let's start something new here. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the issue that I'm going to have with it, or the problems that might arise would be if they go, you know, on that terrible side of feminism where they make it completely, you know, girl power to the extreme. And that's where, you know, the problems will arise for me. But there's going to be backlash, of course. Mm-hmm. You're changing tradition, and you know, people don't like change mostly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think there's going to be some of it, but I mean, I would say the majority of Whovians are female.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course, there's always going to be that type of backlash. Next question.
Okay.
Why do you think the doctor chose this face?
Gentlemen prefer blondes. I don't know. Like,
so because the thing, there was kind of this theme in Kampal. You're not there yet. Did you get to why, like, his whole I know why I chose this face thing? No, you didn't. You're still on Laura, aren't you? You don't have any of that stuff. Okay. Anyway,
go ahead and spoil, because yeah,
I'm not going to spoil anything.
Okay.
But so everyone knows that Capaldi played a part in Doctor Who in the past that wasn't the Doctor. And so a lot of people were like, oh, that's going to be confusing, you know, that he was, you know, playing some Roman guy and now he's going to be the Doctor. But there's this theme in one of Capaldi's episodes where he's just like, oh, I finally found out why I chose this face. And he kind of has like a flashback when he met that version or that, like, and so it kind of confirmed certain theories that the Doctor either that at some like subconscious level is choosing what they're gonna look like, and so that's why I asked. But yeah, because we're like, because there's the theme and there's, but you're not up there, so this question, you're not up to that episode, so this question doesn't make any sense to you. But anyway, yeah. So the doctor has, like, subconsciously, the doctor chooses their next face and what they're going to look like next. And that's one of the things that they wrestle with, like, why did I choose this face? So that's why. So that's why I asked that question. I was just wondering. But you're not even caught up, so none of this stuff even impacts you this way. So, man.
I feel so bad now.
No, you're good.
But you're not caught up, but you don't understand. Okay. Which is fine.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping that they would have chosen a redhead.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, because the doctor chose, like, part of the reason, like, there was kind of aspects of Capaldi's, he's Scottish because of Amelia, all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I was kind of hoping that they would go a redhead route and be like, oh, he's a ginger. Because then with Matt Smith's, like, whenever Matt Smith turns into the doctor, he, like, grabs his hair and he's like, still not a ginger. So it would just be funny if the doctor turned into a lady who was also a ginger. That would be...
Two hearts, no soul.
Yeah.
JK, I love gingers. They're awesome. I'm actually part ginger. Anyway, I have gingery aspects to my hair color. Anyway, yeah, I don't know, because that's, like you said, I haven't gotten there yet.
You'll get there. You'll get there.
Okay. We'll get fall, there together.
So we can start talking about the new season.
Okay. I need to do that. Yeah, so I really don't have anything further. Is there any?
Nothing else for me, but if people are interested in watching this episode, The Victory of the Daleks, in our episode description at ginandcomicspodcast.com, you click on this episode, you look at the description, you'll see a little link to rent or buy, if you so choose, this episode. It's like $2. It's like, it's a deal. Mm-hmm. You just click buy. And so then that'll lead you to Amazon, where it'll give you a digital copy of this episode. So if you're interested in doing that, you can do that.
Yeah. It's a pretty good episode.
It is.
Not.
Despite my complaints, it has its place.
It does, yeah.
The next two episodes.
Oh, boy.
Those are even better.
Spoilers. Yeah, the next two episodes, they make the Matt Smith run, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about, like, arc.
Exactly. And it's the beginning and end of his character arc, in a way. Or at least with Emilius.
So here's my challenge to you listeners. Go watch this episode, watch the next two episodes, and look forward to our episode on the episodes.
They're great. Yeah, they're going to be great. And whatever you do while you're watching it, don't blink.
Yep, don't blink.
Yeah.
And also, we're out of limes.
Geronimo.
Gin and Comics Podcast is a listener-supported podcast, and here are a few ways to support us. By leaving us an iTunes review, we are able to advance our name to new listeners. For your support, we will give away a piece of nerdy merchandise of your choosing for every 10 reviews. However, the most direct way to support us is through Patreon, where we have a number of tiers. For as little as $3 a month, you'll have access to our Patreon-only feed, where you'll receive exclusive episodes and some early release episodes and be featured on our supporters page. For $5 a month, you will receive a hard copy of a book or comic book handpicked by Zach and Ben every month that you are a patron. For $15 a month, you'll receive previous perks, as well as receive video recordings of the shows. For $20 a month, you'll receive the previous perks as well as collectible items selected by Ben and Zach every month that you are a patron. Also in this tier, patrons will be able to access our live chat feature where they can access questions to be answered on the show. For more information about our tiers, you can visit www.patreon.com/webaudio. That's W-E-B-B audio. Help us so that we never run out of limes.